from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Gary Camilla loves San Francisco, and he's walked nearly every square inch of it, from the weathered cliffs of Land's End to the dark corners of the Tenderloin. His new book, Cool Gray City of Love, is a romantic letter to the city and the 49 spots that he thinks make it unique. Camilla shares his favorite history and stories of San Francisco, and we ask you to tell us about the spots that made you fall in love with San Francisco after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Gary Camilla was born in Oakland, grew up in Berkeley, but now lives in San Francisco and has written a love letter to it after walking nearly every square inch of the city by the bay. Co-founder of Salon.com and former culture writer and book editor for the San Francisco Examiner and now writing for The Chronicle, Gary Camilla also drove a cab in San Francisco and published a book called Shadow Knights, The Secret War Against Hitler, which was much praised. His new book is Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco. And he joins us in studio for this morning's second Forum Hour. And Gary, good to have you here.
Nice to be here, Michael.
I also want to mention to listeners, we're going to talk about his book and about San Francisco. And we put out a question on Facebook, and I'm going to put out the question right now. What spots do you particularly think, what spots made you fall in love with San Francisco, assuming that you did fall in love with it at whatever point in your life? And what are your favorite places to walk and run in the city of San Francisco? A lot of that is, what we find in this cornucopia of facts and culture and anecdotes. And this is really quite a mix, your book is.
Yeah, it's a
history, very, too, yeah.
It's an eclectic kaleidoscope. I sort of threw everything that I knew, thought, loved, experienced about San Francisco and life into this book.
And you call it a demented odyssey, which is a curious way to phrase it. But you did go on this ambulatory search to find out, you're dividing the city into grids, really.
Well, I mean, I say in the book that if you divide the city into, a 1,000-yard grids, I'd set foot in every one. It wasn't that I consciously was walking from grid to grid, but there was a delightfully obsessive quality to pursuing everything that I could find out about San Francisco. Like the London taxi drivers have to do what they call the knowledge, which means they have to learn every street in the vast city of London. And that sort of arbitrary, slightly manic quest to find out as much as I could and to walk as much as I could in San Francisco was a driving force in the book. And in a way, it's almost a way of tricking yourself into a kind of Zen appreciation of the place, because I defined everything in the 46 square miles of San Francisco. I said, this is interesting by definition. And, it actually everything is interesting. And if you arbitrarily choose something and make that into your subject of choice, you have find an enormous enjoyment and a great passion. So that was part of the fun of doing it.
Well, the enjoyment comes across. In fact, you use words like euphoric and happy and so forth. And it's infectious to certainly read that kind of prose. Also, I got to tell you, I wrote somebody about this book earlier today, and I said, this is probably the best writing about San Francisco that I've read since Herb Cain. I mean that sincerely.
Well,
it's really, really quite good. And also has or bears all that history and all the rest of that and so forth. In fact, Gary Camilla, with what some would say a great deal of maybe even hubris, says this is his San Francisco. I want to get to that. In fact, description that comes early on in the book where you define it as your San Francisco, but I know that you feel eleemosynary about this being everybody else's as well. I swore I'd use that word once more in my broadcasting career. There it is. He says, and my San Francisco is first and foremost a place, a jagged peninsula that faces one of the most dramatic straits on Earth, a 46-square-mile cornucopia of sea cliffs and hidden beaches and deep canyons and flowing streams and hills, always hills. That's lyrical. That's good stuff.
No, thank you. Well, the place inspires, prose that attempts to reflect it.
And the title, George Sterling. Tell us about that.
Well, George Sterling is now largely forgotten, but in his day, he was acclaimed by his more talented contemporaries, people like Ambrose Bierce and Jack London, because he embodied the bohemian ideal. He was a drinker and a romantic. He engaged in flamboyant actions and was, you know, a character. He was also a sad and lonely man who committed suicide at an early age. But he wrote a poem that used to stand on a little plinth in a park in Russian Hill where I played basketball. One of the lines was, "Oh, cool gray city of love," and that inspired the title of the book.
You also have a timeline in this book, but you say space trumps time.
Yeah. I mean, it's both a history. I go from the beginning of geological time up to the present time, but it's constantly interrupted by things that have to do not with chronology but with space, so that it's a mixed bag. Excuse me. A mixed bag of you know, it'll start out with, it starts with the Farallon Islands. It jumps directly from there into the Tenderloin. And then we go into the very first paleo Indians that were living at, you know, in what is now hunting at the bottom of the bay. But then, you know, we have a chapter on the Filbert Steppes. So it's kaleidoscopic, it's eclectic, and it's attempts to capture in a way the visceral sense of walking through the city while also being aware of this long, interesting past that it has.
Again, the book is Cool Gray, City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco by Gary Kamiya. And let's talk about some of these early chapters. In fact, I'd like to talk about the whole book, but I don't know if we'll have time for that. In 49 minutes, we don't even have that left. We could do one a minute or something like that. But let's talk about, for example, when you start writing about the Farallons, you're writing about a place that you say early on is unlike. Well, let me get the exact language here. The most foreboding piece of real estate to be found within any major city in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I made an attempt to verify that claim. I looked at major cities and what pieces of land actually are under their jurisdiction, and I couldn't find anything that is as desolate and forbidding as the Farallons. The Farallons are 28 miles off the coast. They're haunted by great white sharks. Nobody lives on there except for a few researchers. They're deadly. They're surrounded by savage seas, and yet they are part and have been part of the city and county of San Francisco since 1850, I believe. So it's a marvelous, a strange little piece of the San Francisco mosaic are these remarkable islands that for most people in San Francisco, they're just these bumps on the horizon. And when you visit them, they're quite extraordinary.
And you go from there, like you say, to the Tenderloin, which, again, I'll use your language here, is the only part of San Francisco that remains untamed. Its last human wilderness. Without the Tenderloin and its radioactive core of junkies, drunks, transvestites, dealers, thugs, madmen, hustlers, derelicts, prostitutes, and lowlifes, this overpriced, increasingly homogenous burg would feel like one of those model bathrooms that are sanny sealed for your protection.
Motel bathrooms, right? Yeah, I mean, it was an intentional, extreme juxtaposition, which to me captures one of the things that really makes San Francisco stand out. This city is made up of radical dislocations on almost every corner. You're looking up and seeing, you can see places where no human being has ever set foot, and you may be right next to a overcrowded tenement that feels like you're in Hong Kong. So going from the Farallons to the Tenderloin was intentional and was an attempt to capture that odd extremity.
There's a little bit of editorialization there, too. And you actually, I think, probably may be on the same page as your co-founder of Salon.com, David Talbot, whose book Season of the Witch also deals with his love of San Francisco in some different ways, but who was on the program talking to me about, you know, his concern, his consternation, really, over San Francisco being turned into a place of wealth because of the tech revolution.
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit more sanguine about the current money invasion of the city than David is. I share some of his concerns. I think that many San Franciscans do. We don't want to lose what's unique about the city. On the other hand, cities evolve and change, and there are also good things that are going to come along with this invasion of new energy and money, as well as the bad ones. And I think the jury is out. I don't want to pass judgment on the whole generation of people coming into the city yet. I think it would one thing that historians and lovers of cities have to watch against is nostalgia. And, you know, people in San Francisco started being nostalgic for the good old days starting in about 1849. So, you know, it was like, God, the days when it was Yerba Buena and there were 200 people and you could hear a door slam across town. Man, those days are gone. And that's been going on from the beginning. So you have to watch against that. But there's reason for concern. Absolutely.
So you go from the Farallones and the Tenderloin to the Alcatraz Triangle and the Filbert Steps, which you call the Stairway to Heaven. And let's follow your logic here, if we could.
Yeah, well, the chapter about the bottom of the Paleo Indians coming to San Francisco was really, the beginning of San Francisco's human history. So, you know, whether they came across the land bridge or whether they came by sea, which is a great controversy, 12,000 years ago or so, human beings began to appear in this terrain, and I wanted to capture the dizzying changes in the physical terrain, as well as trying to imagine, you know, the very first human beings here, and they're, you know, with different ice ages throughout the last million years, the bay has come and gone, and when human beings first arrived here, there was no bay. There was a mighty river running out through what is the Golden Gate. So that was, you know, that's kind of an attempt to capture this almost hallucinatory, you know, chapter of the city's history. It's human founding, and where humans could have hunted the giant Rancho Librean megafauna, the Colombian mammoths and the giant bison that were prowling around the area, as well as these terrifying predators like the short-faced bear and the American lion, which were just absolutely stunningly powerful creatures. And this all took place right under the noses of where we are now. So it's a fascinating piece of the Bay's history.
Well, in fact, you say in a chapter that comes a little later, the place where San Francisco history officially begins is on the southern shore of a small body of water in the Richmond District called Mountain Lake.
Right. Well, that's when you actually have the arrival of the Anza expedition in 1776. So that begins the Spanish dominion over what was first called, Yerba Buena, and the founding of Mission Dolores and the Presidio.
Same year we became a republic, in fact.
That's right. That's right. It's San Francisco began at the same time as the United States. So that's one of the salient dates. And Mountain Lake, which is this odd, you know, pleasantly upscale place in the Richmond District, is where they camped when they first came because there was fresh water there. And there's still fresh water there. That's the last remaining free-flowing stream in the city, Lobos Creek, flows out of Mountain Lake and flows down to Baker Beach.
Talking with Gary Camilla, who writes about San Francisco and sends a great deal of love from walking the whole streets of San Francisco, walking really just about every nook and cranny in the city. The book is called Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco, and you compare the Palace of Fine Arts to John Keats's Grecian Urn, which prompts me to ask you, I mean, we've asked listeners, what spot do you made you fall in love with San Francisco, and what do you like to walk in the most, or what do you like to run in the most? Do you have a place that's right at the apex for you?
Well, to me, the most stunning place in the whole city, is still the trail at Land's End, the trail that runs out to the World War II Memorial for the USS San Francisco and out to the Cliff House, and that begins at 25th and El Camino del Mar. That trail is absolutely stunning. I mean, I say in the book, there's short of a stroll in a Rio favela, because even San Francisco cannot compare with the physical splendor of Rio. But in Rio, you know, you get robbed. I know this from personal experience.
I was going to say, yeah. People have been robbed in this city,
yeah,
too.
Of course. Yeah, not quite to the same degree. In Rio, I got robbed like 5 times. But but other cities, you know, Hong Kong, Sydney, Istanbul, all of which I have visited, none of them have natural, spectacular settings like that when you're looking out across to the Marin Headlands, these magnificent cliffs made up of radiolarian chert, these tiny one-celled organisms that drifted down through the ocean. And, you know, it's this uncanny gap in the Coast Range. The only gap there is in 600 miles of the Coast Range is the Golden Gate. So it's this extraordinary place on the earth, and this is right, you know, 20 minutes from the heart of Union Square. This is one of the things that makes the city amazing.
And reading, I guess it was your section on Filbert and Kearney, there's a story about Steve Garvey, the former Los Angeles Dodger. I never heard that. That's a great, tell us. That's a great story.
Oh, yeah. I think this was actually reported by Nick Peters, who is a fine baseball writer. And this is a chapter about the weather in San Francisco. And I'm talking about the notoriously horrible weather at Candlestick Park. And Steve Garvey, who was roundly despised as a Dodger and as a Southlander by every good San Franciscan, actually revealed himself in this quote to be a man of consummate wit. As this quote is something like, I remember once I was playing in Candlestick and we were walking through the tunnel after a loss, and a gin bottle came whizzing through and smashed into the ground. I looked down and it was empty. And right then you knew you were in San Francisco. In New York, they would have left half of it full for more impact. A Candlestick, they had to drink all of it to keep warm. So the despised Steve Garvey, I actually rose considerably in my estimation after that anecdote, which was reported by Nick Peters.
Well, did you despise him? You use the word despise, in fact, because he was a Giant or for other reasons?
Oh, no, because he was a Dodger.
A Dodger and you were a Giant fan.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No, it was sort of de rigueur. And Garvey was also, you know, highly sanctimonious. So there was everything about Garvey at that time in the Giants-Dodgers rivalry inspired, you know, good-natured. I mean, I didn't truly hate the guy.
Steve and Cindy Garvey. They were like Ken and Bobby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They seemed very sort of white-bread, all-American, Republican, you know, Los Angeles, blue. Everything about them was lined up to take them down. I have nothing about the guy himself whatsoever. This is baseball hatred, which is a hatred that exists in so many.
Well, it's
universe.
A deep hatred when it goes into. That's why they call them fans. They're fanatics. Again, we're talking about San Francisco with Gary Camilla, and we're going to hear from you. And in fact, we welcome hearing from you. Not only the question I asked about what's the place that made you fall in love with San Francisco, which we're asking listeners on Facebook and asking to tweet us, our Twitter handle at KQED Forum, but also where do you like most in San Francisco to walk and where do you like most in San Francisco to run? And there's so much history and so many stories and subjective impressions, as I said, reporting in this book. You may simply want to join us with any questions or comments you might have. I'm actually opening the book to chapter 10 where you begin by saying San Francisco is famous for its natural beauty. To call its beauty natural is misleading. Paradoxical truth is that before the city existed, its terrain was not particularly beautiful.
Well, and that's – I deliberately overstated it. But the point I wanted to make was that San Francisco and all of the early explorers report this was a wilderness of sand dunes and scrub brush with the incessant westerly wind blowing sand into everything and very few, by some reports, almost no large trees. There were a few groves of oak trees here and there. But it was a sort of a chaparral terrain. And, it had its own beauty. There's no doubt. Golden Gate Park was a wilderness of dunes, and that dunes are beautiful. But it certainly was a much more gaunt and barren landscape than the one that emerged with, for example, the creation of Golden Gate Park.
Well, we want to get your thoughts about San Francisco and what is most beautiful about the city or most endearing or most moving and what you're most enamored of. And you can do that now actually by phone as well, 866-733-6786, or give us a call about any questions or comments on your mind. Again, the toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. And there are a number of other ways, of course, of communicating with us by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Let me read some comments that are coming in. Listener writes, I moved to San Francisco on a whim about 10 years ago, but after a disastrous first year that saw the end of my 7-year relationship with my girlfriend, I seriously considered moving back to New England. I began filling my newly abundant free time with aimless walks through the outer Richmond, and I just fell in love with the city as I explored Sutro Heights, Seal Rock, and China Beach. Many of the most important decisions of my life since then have been made sitting on the giant rock at China Beach, staring out at the Marin Headlands and the endless ocean beyond. To native Californians, these scenes may be old hat, but to an East Coast transplant, they are transformative. Another listener says, moving from the frenetic New York area many years ago, I had fallen in love with San Francisco as a child on many vacation trips with my family. To me, it is a peaceful, non-judgmental place to be. I love all of its many varied neighborhoods, but also adore the small discoveries, the 16th Avenue steps, the many alleys that wind their way through the city, the amazing Mission District murals. There is always something new and wonderful to explore. At the same time, it is still a challenging city, never boring, always a surprise. In the end, I am happier in San Francisco than I've been anywhere else in the world. And of course, speaking your kind of language there, Gary. Another listener writes, when I have visitors, one of the places I usually take them is to the Columbarium in the sunset behind the Coronet Theater. The four-tiered dome building and the personalized niches of the cremains tell the whole history of the city. Survivors of the Donner Party, famous people like the Folgers, a woman born in Chinatown who loved baseball, Jews, Freemasons, gays, and lesbians, everyone is there. And of course, you also talk about, and I think it's important to mention, some of the more disgraceful sides of this city's history, particularly where people of color are concerned and minorities.
Yeah, it's it's not a pretty picture in many ways. The sort of founding, the most disgraceful episode in the city's history, in its recent history certainly, was the urban renewal and the raising of the Western Addition in the name of progress and enlightened city planning, which was well-intentioned. It was a case of the road to hell being paved with good intentions. The planners, after World War II, believed that all of these so-called blighted areas would spring into new life if they were bulldozed down and nice, shiny new high-rises were raised. And this eviscerated the black community of San Francisco, and it's never recovered. And the city has become increasingly – has lost its black population ever since then.
I just saw some recent statistics. The black population in the city jails is, as you can imagine, quite extraordinarily high compared to, I say imagine, compared to the population in the city.
I mean,
it's a vast kind of chasm, in fact. Again, we asked listeners on Facebook, tell us about spots that made them fall in love with San Francisco. Let me give you a few responses. Wendy says, the Filbert Steps. Amrit says, Crooked Street. Lori says, the view of the Golden Gate Bridge from the coastal trail at Land's End. Colin writes, Twin Peaks. Whenever the city got to be too much, I would go up and look down on its changing my perspective. Mm. And let's go to a caller here, and we'll bring you on immediately here. Tom, good morning.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing? I wanted to compliment you on your program, and also Gary. He is really capturing the nature of what the city has to offer.
I worked
for the Chronicle for a number of years, and at the end of my stint there, after 22 years, I did a series of stories for them for the Pink section on walking every street. And I basically, that was about a six-year project in 2,612 streets, roughly about 1,200 miles. And it was a fantastic experience, but I think Gary has really captured the essence of what it's like walking through the city and exploring all of the different nooks and crannies.
So it sounds like you've read Gary's book.
No, I haven't yet, but I certainly will. Like I said, from the excerpts that you've had and hearing him talk, it sounds like he's really got a good handle on that.
He's got a definite handle on it. It's his handle, but it's also a handle I think readers will enjoy. I got him plugging you, Gary, here. It's just shameless. Glenn writes, I live on Kansas below Vermont Street, which is the real curviest street in San Francisco. And Vermont has steep sidewalks and great views of the Mission and 101's Hospital Curve. We also ask listeners to share what their favorite routes are for exploring San Francisco by foot, be it walking or running. Tell us what makes San Francisco such a great town to explore by foot. Quick responses. Jessica says the magic of running in San Francisco is that you're always cresting a hill and seeing the entire city spread out beneath you. Also, you can experience numerous weather systems in a single run. I've gone from sunshine into thick fog by merely crossing a street. What can surpass the view of fog cascading tower, Twin Peaks? This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with Gary Camilla, co-founder of Salon.com, and he'll be at Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30 next Wednesday.
And tomorrow night.
Yes, tomorrow night. Right. And at the San Francisco Public Library, 6 p.m. on the 18th of September, and City Lights on the 2nd of October. at the Commonwealth Club. His new book, which we're talking about here, is Cool Gray City of Love, a romantic letter to the city and the 49 spots that he thinks make it unique, talking about really the favorite history of San Francisco and the places that make it so great and so wonderful for so many people and have made people fall in love with it. And I just read actually something before we went on the air by a listener and left out a clause here. She says, What can surpass the view of fog cascading over Twin Peaks like a mighty waterfall and the Sutro Tower wading waist deep? There is no more magical running city. So as I said, we asked people about where you like to run and walk. Rody says, I love running along the coastal trail from Land's End to China Beach and occasionally all the way to the Golden Gate Bridge. It has the best views of the sunrise and sunset, even on cloudy days. The distant views of the bridge and the ocean are all beautiful. And Lauren writes, run along the Embarcadero, then up the steep Filbert steps, which are great for building leg muscles, all the way to Coy Tower. Also, people love to criticize the marina, but the run from Chrissy Field to the Golden Gate Bridge and over it is amazing and fun to do, even in rough weather. I want to read one other email here from Peter, who says, who actually came here same year I came here, and Gary moved out of the East Bay to San Francisco in 1970. He says, over the past couple of decades, San Francisco is a better place than when I arrived in 1970. For example, the long empty Presidio and Chrissy Field, once a dumping ground, have literally been reborn thanks to a largely volunteer effort. The waterfront plan, adopted in the early 1990s, paved the way for the fantastic public space growing from Fisherman's Wharf to Hunter's Point. We tore down the hideous double-deck freeways that destroyed Hayes Valley and the waterfront, allowing for both areas to be transformed. South of Market wasn't known as SoMa when it was an area marked by abandoned buildings that once served the long-gone maritime industry. Now it's the future of San Francisco's new upscale neighborhoods amid the biotech industry. The Mission District has become a popular neighborhood for those who just starting out in life, what North Beach was in the Beat Generation, and now even the intractable stretch of Market between 5th and Van Ness, for which so many previous plans have failed, has finally turned the corner, thanks in part to social media.
Well, I agree with all of that, everything that writer mentions. These are all improvements. There are many of them enormous improvements. Chrissy Field, the waterfront. And, you know, along with the improvements, there comes some intangible, trickier downsides, which have to do with, with homogenization, gentrification, affluence. These are good things. They're double-edged swords as well. They have their drawbacks in certain ways. But in terms of the spatial improvement, physical improvement of the sort of infrastructure and the terrain of the city, it's undeniable that there's been enormous improvements in the last 30, 40 years.
Let's go to more of your calls. We welcome our next caller, and that's Eric. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. Just want to say I'm a big fan, love your program. But one of my favorite walks in San Francisco is to start off in the Civic Center and enjoy the beautiful library. You got City Hall, and then you walk up Hyde Street, and you get to enjoy seeing the cable car route, the beautiful wealth of Nob Hill, and then you end in George Sterling Park with a magnificent view of the Golden Gate Bridge. And if you sit there at night, you can watch the fog roll in on the bay, and it is just spectacular.
Well, thanks for that. Gary's nodding his head here. We'll hear from some more of you. We go next to Roger. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My first impression of San Francisco, and also I've taken many walks in the city. I've lived here since 1958. I was a Marine coming back from Okinawa, and we were all ordered below deck. But I had a tendency to disobey orders, some orders, and I went above, and I looked through a hatchway as we were coming under the Golden Gate Bridge. And this is in 1958. It looked a lot different than it does now. And the city looks pastel, looked all white. The buildings were human scale. They weren't large buildings then. It was just almost instantaneous love. And the city treated me well almost from the very beginning. We docked over at Treasure Island. Actually, we docked on the Embarcadero. We bussed us over to Treasure Island. And I walked back to the city. I came back to the city on a bus. And I walked up to Nob Hill, and the Pacific Union Club was there. I didn't know anything about Pacific Union Club. I just walked in the front door, and I said, what's this? They said, you're really not allowed to come in here. But I was still in uniform, so they were very sympathetic. And then I walked from there down to Aquatic Park, and I met the most lovely girl. I was 16 when I joined the Marines, and I was almost sent to Okinawa immediately. So I knew nothing about American Girls, knew nothing about anything. And when I fell in love with this young girl here in San Francisco, she lived up in Nob Hill, or not Nob Hill, where the cross is, Mount Davidson. And it was just the most beautiful, sensitive, wonderful time of my life. Now, I have a wonderful life now, but that was so pure because I was so young and innocent.
Roger, you are waxing nostalgic for us. And
I know.
It's fun. No, it's fun to hear, and I thank you for that.
That's great.
Gary, talk about walking and how important walking is. I remember Rebecca Solnit wrote a whole book on it, and we have a lot of walkers here in the city. In fact, I think Alfred Kazin, those who remember, great literary figure who wrote Walker in the City, although it was about New York. Just the joy of walking.
Yeah. For me personally, one of the things that inspired this sort of peregrinations on foot, perambulations, was my knees, which had been shot for more than a decade. And I still wandered around, but it was in a very sort of stoic, purposeful way. When you have knee pain, you sort of decide where you're going to go, and then you put up with it. And when I got my knees replaced, suddenly it became possible to become aimless and to begin sort of flitting. And that sense of flitting around was so euphoric after having, it's kind of like, being hit on the head with a mallet for 10 years and it goes away. So it really opened.
You were suddenly titanium, man.
Yes.
Bionic.
I was the iron jointed butterfly. And so the joy of walking is just, a wonderful thing in a city. And this city is, spectacular for it because of the constant changes of the terrain and the constant changes of the neighborhoods. I mean, the distinct San Francisco's famously distinct neighborhoods, which are one of the great things to discover as you walk, are in part a creature of the terrain. The terrain makes, Noe Valley distinct from the Fairmont Hill and Glen Canyon. All of these different neighborhoods are. Russian Hill is separated from by this ancient geological syncline from Telegraph Hill, and this intricate terrain gives it the city this wonderful sort of step by step changing quality. That's one of the joys of walking through it.
And one can see certain figures. Before we went on the air, we were talking about Herb Gold, who's a longtime friend of mine and who actually gave your book a very good review, which is a
wonderful review.
Yeah, well, and great coming from him because he is a walker in the city. I mean, you can see him at different times in different places, and I have many instances.
Absolutely, yeah. Herb is a ubiquitous figure wandering around town, so I was very touched and flattered that he enjoyed the book so much because he's a link with an earlier and legendary literary generation, and he knows San Francisco incredibly well and has written about it. So and lives up on top of Russian Hill and in an area that has long been a haunt of bohemians and writers and artists, going all the way back to Gillette Burgess these wonderful bohemian writers and poets of that era. So it's a nice continuity.
All of whom Herb knew quite well, in fact. Yeah. Let me get Neil on next. Neil, join us.
Yes. Which of the preservation groups that you know of anyway are the best, the most effective? Do you belong to any of them?
I myself do not. There's San Francisco Architectural Preservation Groups. There's a friend of mine.
San Francisco Beautiful.
Yeah, heads up a group that's dedicated to protecting movie theaters in the city. So, there are many of them, but I myself, it's not something I'm involved in, but I think it's absolutely praiseworthy, and the movement really began back in the early 70s, the destruction of the city of Paris and certain downtown buildings inspired. There's a wonderful book that came out called Splendid Survivors by a guy named Michael Corbett, where he ranked every downtown building in terms of its literally on a scale of 1 to 5 or A to B or C, and in terms of their interest and historical interest, and that began to inspire the city to not just promiscuously knock down all of its great buildings. And there are some incredibly awful losses. The most glaring was the most famous notable building in the history of San Francisco, which was called the Montgomery Block. And shockingly, this building goes back to Mark Twain, who actually met a San Francisco fireman named Tom Sawyer in the sauna there. This building was the haunt of writers and artists from earliest days of the city. It was not razed until, I think, 1958. So that's scandalous that a building like this, I think it was knocked down for a parking lot and then it became the Transamerica Pyramid. But we've gotten more enlightened since then.
How many square miles, Zach wants to know, is this city actually?
It's 46-something. It's the legend has it that it's 49, but in fact, it's 46-some fraction. I can't remember.
Well, you also started out in your odyssey, your demented odyssey, really getting knowledge, or use that taxi cab driver term again from London, of Golden Gate Park, which was
right.
Quite a challenge too, because we're talking about a place that's, about 1,000 quarter mile, you had a 1,000 quarter mile grid.
Yeah, it's 1,000, something like 1,000 acres. By comparison, Central Park in New York is, I think, 800, so it's 20% bigger than Central Park, and of course it's much more overgrown and sort of chaotic. And that was absolutely delightful. That it was, in a way, it was almost like the miniature version of the book, because I would drop my daughter off at her high school near the Panhandle, and I just said, okay, I'm going to learn this park, which I'd, like most San Franciscans, I've been going to haphazardly for 30 years. But if you don't actually sort of set out with a map and a notebook and a plan, you'll just forget whatever it is that you discovered. I wouldn't know one trail from the other. So for the next month or two, every day I would walk through it for an hour, hour and a half, and I literally began to know all the little trails that would connect up the little meadows and find the really boring patches of the park, which are some pretty, pretty tedious stretches of the park, and find just wonderful little nooks and crannies, the horseshoe pits, which is a wonderful obscure area in the far eastern part of the park. So that was kind of almost like a dry run for the rest of the book.
And again, if you just joined us, our guest is Gary Camilla, and his book is called 49 Views of San Francisco. And here's Brett, who has ridden your bike everywhere in the city, Brett?
Yes, I've ridden every road in San Francisco.
Wow. How long? If you blogged about it too, Irene told me.
I did create a blog about it, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Mainly so I could track it. But I wanted to call in mainly and just congratulate Gary on walking every road. Having ridden every road, just walking seems insurmountable to me.
Yeah, I must say, in all honesty, I cannot claim, unlike the caller who called earlier, who I think really did walk every road, I can't claim to have walked every road.
Right.
I've walked every certain grid probably in the city, but I'm impressed that you've ridden every road. That's an enormous and impressive undertaking. It must have been a lot of fun.
And there are people who may want to read your blog. It's rideallofsf.tumblr.com. I think I have it right. Do I, Brett?
Tumblr. Yeah.
Tumblr.com. I mean, yeah. Oh, good. Well, congratulations. Thank
yeah.
you. Some tweets. Barbara says, the San Francisco view from Coit Tower, the Golden Gate Bridge from the parking lot of the St. Francis Yacht Club, marching in the 76 Pride Parade. Mm. Jason says, his favorite routes are to go through Golden Gate Park and down the Panhandle and along the Embarcadero to Dog Patch. So many, though. Mark writes, I have a number of San Francisco places that are dear to my heart, many of which don't exist anymore or are now in a truncated state. The Grand Piano Cafe on Haight, walking by Enrico's and chatting with the regulars on the street there, grabbing a late-night burger and visiting with the Demimonde at Hot and Hunky. What saddens me most is the demise of these places, but the sense that what San Francisco is losing, the feeling that the people of this place were different. San Francisco is still an amazingly beautiful city, but people with that unique San Francisco spirit are becoming an endangered species. Alfred says, my lifelong love with the city is the love I receive from others when I answered their query about my place of origin. While living in Europe and traveling from Amsterdam to Morocco and many further trips, it mattered not who was asking. Nearly everyone went into explosions of passion about their experiences there. I love San Francisco, was oft-repeated claim. Always brought huge smiles of pride to myself and my companion. And it was just last week in the British Isles, it has that response in Scotland, England, and Ireland as well. Michael says, what makes me feel the best is to take the Hyde Street cable car late at night when there are no tourists and very little traffic. When it rattles through the western edge of Chinatown and into Russian Hill, it is just so the city. Josh says, surprisingly rarely visited spot is the Grand View Park, the outcropping mm-hmm. above Golden Gate Heights. It offers an amazing panorama from Ocean Beach to the Marin Headlands to the East Bay and the entire northern half of the city. Shh, don't tell anybody. Dave asks, does your guest know the tallest or highest point in San Francisco and what can be found there?
Yeah, the tallest point is Mount Davidson, which exceeds Twin Peaks. And that's it's a gorgeous hill. That's has the interesting controversy. It has this cross on the very top of the hill, which a lawsuit was brought against the city of San Francisco because that violates the principle of separation of church and state. So the city sold it to an Armenian group or a bunch of groups for a dollar or something, thereby removing its official ownership of that cross, and it's a commemoration of the Armenian genocide. So if you have any Turkish friends who are genocide deniers, don't take them up to the Mount Davidson cross. Now, this isn't a slur against Turkish people.
Well, no. I had the Turkish ambassador sitting right where you are denying that genocide took place to me on the air. Let me go to more of your calls, and Kim joins us next. Kim, welcome.
Hi. I worked at a car rental in the Tenderloin on O'Farrell Street, and one thing that I love about the city is even if you're walking around a bad, quote-unquote, bad neighborhood, at the place that I worked, we had these gargoyles that stuck out in front. They were dragons with very long necks, and it's a basic parking garage, but here you had these eight beautiful gargoyles sticking out towards O'Farrell Street. And after the earthquake, I remember that the apartment houses across the street, they sustained, you know, the windows went crashing down in the street. And so I ran out. The first thing I did is I ran out to see if our gargoyles were fine. They were perfect. Nothing touched them. And I love that it's a street that people would avoid, but there are treasures there. That's San Francisco.
Very well said. Thank you for that. And a listener asks, what shoes does Gary wear for all his walking? And also, does he have any recommendations for a good muni line to take simply for exploration purposes?
No, whatever shoes come to hand. Usually Rockport walkers are pretty good. Work for me, but tennis shoes, you know, whatever. And then what was the second part of the question?
Second part of the question was, do you have a muni line that you recommend for good exploration?
Oh, God, so many amazing muni lines. Running the One California, which just runs from the financial district all the way out into the Richmond district, takes you through a big slice of San Francisco. The 30 Stockton, aka the Chinatown Express, is a fascinating section. There's some long, interesting lines, odd lines like the 27 Bryant that runs from Knob Hill all the way to Bernal Heights. That's the 22 Fillmore that takes you from the wealthy Marina district and ends up going all the way over to Potrero Hill and goes through some sketchy neighborhoods. You can have endlessly interesting adventures riding the Muni.
Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Meredith. Michelle, good morning.
Hi, how are you? This is a great show. I just wanted to talk a little bit. We're talking about the city as a character, but, we also have to think of the characters that San Francisco has produced. And I just wanted to tell a quick story, which was I had done a three-year stint, a corporate stint back in Connecticut. And the day that I came home, I landed in the airport. And when I got out of the plane and was walking across the airport, who do I see sitting there but the two Brown twins? In their matching outfits, Miriam and Vivian, and I went up to them and told them, I've been gone for three years, and I'm so happy to see you sitting here and so glad to see that you're still here. And they were totally gracious, of course.
Oh, that's great. Great
good story. Yeah, thank you for that. More spots that made our listeners fall in love with San Francisco. Shauna says the ferry terminal, because it's where my husband and I were when we decided to move to the Bay Area, and it represents everything about the amazing food here. Ivan writes the Purple Onion. Amanda says Telegraph Hill with its houses, streets, and stairs. And Patsy says, one of my first impressions after arriving from New York City was that a taxi driver opened the door for me. Thanks for this program. I love living in Point Reyes, but fondly remember my days in San Francisco. Another listener says the streets, the way the streets run straight up and down the hills rather than conform to the hill contours, makes for stunning views. On the downside, the way Market was laid out to Twin Peaks bisecting Kearney at an angle makes for unfortunate downtown intersections where the streets come in at severe angles. Oh, well. Another listener, Anna, says, I don't think any American city is all that great. San Francisco may be the best of the American cities, but none compare with the European or even Mexican cities I've had the fortune to visit. Non-American cities are actually livable and enjoyable for middle-class families. Instead of making our cities enjoyable, we've abandoned them to extremes of autos and human behaviors and then declared victory and exclaim how wonderful they are. Staff says, I jog along the waterfront. There's a little park at the eastern end of 24th I think many don't know about. It has earmarks of being an industrial stop. We'll build a park if you'll allow us another smokestack. A little neglected, but still tranquil. And Ben says, walk Mission Street from the water till you can't stand. Neela says, love the city because of its beautiful topography. Viewing the bay, it's nice, laid back, liberal, accepting, kind, and creative people. It's beautiful, mesmerizing fog, its walkable streets. As an immigrant, it is the least that resembles the United States of America, the one and only place that I could imagine living after leaving my home country. And we'll go to another caller here. And that's Russ from San Francisco. Hi.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted to say I just bought the book as a result of listening to this program, and I've lived in San Francisco in the Bay Area all my life and really don't have a book just real on the city of San Francisco. But I hope the book perhaps serves as a wake-up call for those in the city to kind of protect what's really unique about the city, because I was telling the individual who answered the call, yesterday I was in the financial district in this little alleyway between Kearney and Montgomery off of Bush, where this gentleman, who apparently has been in the trade for some time, has opened this little bookstore reminiscent of the stalls in Paris along the river, that where he's using the windows from this old display case, about four or five of them, to sell antique books. And it's just really, it's just an incredible little, nice little touch in the city of San Francisco. And so many of these things, unfortunately, you know, don't have an opportunity to surface, or they're kind of phased out because of, you know, something new coming in that replaces them. So that's my comment.
Well said. Thank you for the comment. And let me go right to another caller. And that's Deborah. Hi.
Hi. Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to comment, I cannot wait to read this book. I have my own love affair with San Francisco that started when I was a child in New York when I was four, and the late-night movie was the movie San Francisco with Clark Gable. And I looked at my mother and said, Mommy, when I grow up, I'm going to live there. And she said, yeah, of course you are, dear. But when I turned 16, I moved here sight unseen after years of reading the San Francisco Chronicle at my local library on microfiche and staring at a huge map of San Francisco that I had on my wall, having memorized the street map. And I have to say, with all of that lead up, San Francisco is not a disappointment. And I have lived here for 17 years now, and it is just the most incredible place on earth.
Well, good of you to call and say that, and we thank you. In fact, that Clark Gable movie, you may recall, Gary, that when Quentin Kopp was head of the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco, he wanted to change the city song from the Tony Bennett favorite, I Left My Heart in San Francisco, to Open Your Golden Gate song from that movie. Which seems more apt, actually, you know, than leaving your heart here. If you leave your heart here,
right? Yeah.
But
the Tony song is just so wonderful. I think we it's grandfathered in now. We can't get rid of that. And they play it when the Giants win. So
there you are again, back to your Giants love. We did a show. In fact, I think it's in our archives. I'm pretty sure Dan's all our senior editor really loved and cotton to this show, just about San Francisco being featured in all the different motion pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Featured, and that was, really quite enlightening. Let me get another caller on. Patty, that's you. Hi.
Oh, hi. I think your original question was, do you remember when you fell in love with San Francisco?
Or what was it that you
I have
with?
My date. It was May 30th, 1956. I came across the country on the train. And at that time, I don't know what the trains do now, but you got off in Oakland and came across the bay on a ferry. And so this was a beautiful, sunshiny day. I had never seen anything as beautiful as San Francisco. Still feel that way.
And the date and the image are obviously etched in your mind. Hmm?
Say it again?
I say the date even as well as the image are etched in your consciousness.
Oh, yeah. That's an important day. Absolutely.
Well, good of you to call, Patty. Thank you. I want to get another caller on. Mike, hi. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to comment. Listening to the show, I kind of changed it up a little bit here. But, I'm taking a History of San Francisco course at CCSF with Darlene Alioto. And it's funny, you can actually, you know, as your guest probably knows, you can see the Mount Davidson cross from the campus. That's a really nice view. But I wanted to comment as far as walking. I worked at Fort Mason with the Park Service for 2 years, and Upper Fort Mason, it's kind of touristy, but it's really nice walkways. And at the back of that base, you get an excellent panoramic view looking out. You can see everything from the Golden Gate Bridge to the Bay Bridge, Alcatraz, and everything else. And my other spot is coming into the city from Marin County. You can see everything again. I mean, it's like a postcard. It's how could it not take your breath away is the way I feel about it. It's such a world-class city in terms of the aesthetics. And, you know, and I have family that goes back to San Francisco all the way into the 1890s. You know, our presence has been here. And so that's really all I wanted to say. I think one of the best cities in the world. I know I'm biased, but that's how I feel.
Well, no problem with your bias. Thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. And Charles says, what about the hill above Candlestick Park, the Moore former military site? Totally unvisited because in the city's southeast section, but great steep start and circle the top.
Yep, that's a beautiful hill. It's a steep one.
Mondo from the Mission writes, having built parade floats for all of San Francisco's parades. I love how San Franciscans love parades and festivals. I still do Carnival with my group. We built over 100 floats for the Chinese New Year's, 1989 to 2003. All to say, the city is a great festival town. And this is a feast of a book. Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco by Gary Camilla. And you can meet him tomorrow night at Capitola Book Cafe at 7:30. Next Wednesday, he'll be at the San Francisco Public Library at 6, and on September 18th at City Lights, October 2nd at Commonwealth Club. And as you hear, we're going out with Tommy's joint, I'm looking at it in front of me. They just keep rolling in here in terms of the places people love, with Tony Bennett. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you, Michael.
To be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.